Triple M Football is the number one football call on radio.
Boys on the radio.
And your front row.
Perrine hot water heaters. If your hot water needs replacing, accept nothing less than Australia's best. Install Arene.
Welcome to the Sunday Rub.
For McDonald's fan feed boxes.
Triple M rocks football.
Yes, a very good afternoon and welcome to the Sunday Rub. And leading up to the game, of course, Port Adelaide and St Kilda. Brian Taylor with you, joined by Wayne Swass, Wayne Carey and JZJ Clark. Also here today to talk all the footy action so far. Good afternoon, Swatter. Welcome to you.
Hey, Brian. Good to have the footy back.
It is indeed. It's been an interesting round of football, Duck.
Yeah, g'day, boys, listeners. It has. It's been a good start to the first round, I think. There's been a couple of big shocks. Melbourne up and about. Good win yesterday. Come from behind. So it's been exciting.
And Jay-Z, we've enjoyed not having to see you for 6 months. But, we're now back together. And, well, you're going to bring us all the news throughout the year.
Yeah, that's right, BT. I was up at the Gold Coast. Good to see you too, Brian. Up at the Gold Coast last night. Got back into Melbourne at 2 a.m. this morning. So a little tired, I must say. But it's not all that bad for the Bombers. I know they got pants totally in the off-season, Duck. But I saw they were competitive in patches. So Essendon fans this morning, it's okay.
It is good to see Brian again. We've all missed one another. Yeah. And a little bit less of him, I must say.
10
he's
kilos.
Lost 10
I'm heading,
kg.
Heading back to my playing weight.
Well, a little birdie told me, went in there to Channel 7 and Peter Jackson. He had to get all new suits this year. Peter Jackson, a little bit more of a trim-fitting sort of style number there, BT.
It'll be interesting when I blow out again.
What has been the fitness regime, BT? Sort of out there with the tractor and the trailer in the yard, or sort of on the treadmill, so Rocky IV style. What have you been doing?
Yeah, and don't forget the stand-up paddleboard. I've been regarded as a superstar at.
Just always remember, abs are made in the kitchen, not the gym.
Yeah. By the way, how's the farm going? Well, it's coming in the farm winter. Is there any sign of any grass? Because it's all rock.
Can I go with this now? Tell me something.
You've got something to tell us, have you?
Yeah, I have. So I'll tell you later on.
All right.
It's got to do with my lovely little property.
Excellent. Tell me something I don't know a little bit later on as well. We look forward to that. Going to speak to Rowan White about all the latest in the injuries as well, particularly out of the game last night, Jay-Z and Swatter. I might start with you, Swatter, first of all. Your thoughts, did you watch most of the game last night? I know you were working.
Which one?
The Collingwood game?
No, we had a good game, Adelaide versus North.
Yeah, no, definitely saw it. Sydney, very good, but it's hard to draw a line. How good were they we know how poor Collingwood were because the lack of pressure. I mean, they just opened them up, didn't they? I mean, down the middle, their use of the footy, the Swans, they look good. They're young kids. Boy, have they got some talent there. And I thought, Swatter, that, and a lot of other people have thought that Sydney might be a little bit on the slide, and it's not because of their top-end talent, BT. I just thought
they still might be because their depth hasn't been tested.
I thought their defence was an area that might get tested with, obviously, Grundy and Richards wasn't playing last night. But I just thought their run off half-back. I mean, they've lost Malcheski, they've lost Shaw and these guys. Rowan plays off half-back sometimes. Just that really good user. They didn't really get tested last night, did they? Cloak couldn't get near it. He was statless.
Interesting you say that because Lingy thought that as well, that they hadn't been tested. And so we still don't know whether that's
true.
Good
but
or
they looked fantastic. Collingwood, well, a lot of questions.
I just can't believe there's that much difference. Said it on the telecast last night that there's that much difference between Sydney and Collingwood. Now, I think everyone thought going into that game that probably Collingwood would win it. And we're going to talk about the drug issue as a separate thing a little bit later on, but I'm sure that played a part in the minds of those younger Collingwood players particularly, but can't be that much difference between the two sides.
It was interesting, we'll talk about it later, Nathan Buckley actually touched on that as a potential excuse, but for me, they just got smashed in the contest. Now, we know last year that Collingwood was one of the better pressure sides in the competition. They really did have a dip. It was some of their polish which was lacking, but last night, they totally got pulverised in the contest. That's where it started and really fell away. So the big question for me now for Nathan Buckley is, does he back in the same lot of guys against Richmond in 6 days' time, or does he look at wholesale changes, even as early as round two, because Aish is in the twos, Howe played in the twos. Ben Reid, we know, got a game under his belt yesterday.
We're going to have
Brody
two
Grundy.
Compulsory changes. Swan's not going to play and Sidebottom's not going to play.
And you would think they are massive, massive outs. For a side that's coming up against a decent side in Richmond and the MCG, Swan and Sidebottom. And Sidebottom's first quarter, BT, he was one of the shining lights.
You hit the nail on the head. It's all above the shoulders. Clearly, you don't get smashed in the contested ball, in the contest itself, like they did last night. I mean, they just weren't in it at all. Big tick was Treloar. First game for his new club. He was very good. And you're right. That's the one thing. I think the strength of Collingwood this year, or certainly we thought, is their depth through the midfield. They can run a lot of guys through there. You mentioned a couple that could come back in next week. If you're Nathan Buckley, I think after a performance like that, you have to drop blokes.
Mm.
You can't just give guys free games after, you know, a performance like that.
A return of Buddy Franklin? What'd you make of it?
Well, I thought the strut was back. I saw a bit of swagger, especially early, and you guys sort of picked it up. I thought it was a really good call. He just had that confidence, you know, and a bit of a swagger for him, and it wasn't his best game.
A little rusty.
Yeah, definitely a little rusty, but I think he looked to be enjoying his footy and looked to be in a happy place out there. You know, he kicked the first goal. Everyone got around him. You get the goosebumps. So I thought it was a sensational moment for him and for the game. So you said, you know, he wasn't at his absolute best. But I think you look at Buddy Franklin last night and think he can have a 60-goal season pretty easily.
What he did was kick the ball beautifully from set shots. I mean, he split the middle with all of his set shots that he had. I guess if there was one part of his game, but it's always been a weakness of his game, and that is above his head. He's never been a great mark. He dropped it. He did hurt his shoulder. So, you know, how serious that is. It looks like a little AC.
I would say definitely had a jab on that. Went down the room.
No doubt about that. Yeah. And that'll be sore. You shouldn't miss with that. That's just a low grade. And we're going to be speaking to Doc White today about that. But, you know, he'll be able to play through that. But they stay sore for 3, 4, 5 weeks, AC joints.
Mm.
A bit uncomfortable.
And tip it in the ruck, BT. I thought he
started there ahead of Sinclair.
Yeah, I like that, the way he sort of swung forward. He looked damaging to me. He probably hasn't lived up to it just yet, but last night
He lived up to it towards the end of last year. His last 5 or 6 games last year, Swatter, were very good, Tippett, because he when he plays in the ruck, he gets around the ground and gets his hands on the footy and he drifts forward. As a stay-at-home forward, he doesn't have the ability to get a gap on his opponent. He just doesn't have that take-off
speed. So, Swatter, is he ruck forward or forward ruck?
Yeah, I said it late last year, BT. I think the combination works better where he's ruck than rests forward with Buddy, because when you've got Kurt Tippett and Buddy Franklin inside the same forward 50, sometimes they cancel each other out.
Not even his ruck drift forward. So not ruck rest forward, ruck drift forward. And then so you just come down with the play, rather than start there. I think that's when he plays his best. And all of those times he kicked 3 goals last year, he wasn't playing forward. He was playing in the ruck at the time when he kicked those goals.
And it's a great way to get him into the game, as Doug said, as opposed to starving him inside forward 50. He gets criticised quite quickly if he's not producing any results on the scoreboard. So I think that's the right mix.
Mm. And Witts, the other ruckman, of course, picked ahead of Grundy. And I thought Grundy had some reasonable pre-season form, Jay-Z, but didn't get a look in. I think because of the small ground, they said we only need to play the one ruckman.
Yeah.
They had Gaunt there as a backup.
It's a surprise to me. I mean, I thought Grundy is their number one ruckman. And I think Witts did have a better preseason, or the Magpies certainly believe that Witts had the better preseason. But that was a surprise to me. I thought Grundy is the better of the two, because he can go forward and take a catch as well.
Well, it has to be judged. And obviously, they know who's had the better. If Witts has had the better preseason, he gets played in front of him. Simple as that. And that's all you can go off.
Mm. They've got some players to come back in next week, the Pies. So while there will be a few out, I mean, Ace is there waiting. Ben Reed's there waiting. There were one or two others that are ready-made and ready to go as well.
Howe and Grundy.
Yes.
And there's a question mark now over Nathan Brown as well. He sort of had that hamstring tightness.
He won't play. If they're saying it's hamstring tightness, it means it's 1 or 2 weeks.
So you think that opens a door straight in for Ben Reed. If not John Marsh, he's sort of, you know, an exciting tall prospect. But you think if Reed gets through yesterday against Coburg, I believe he did, then I think it paves way for his return to AFL level.
All right, the big news out of last night, and we'll talk about your game as well, the North Melbourne game shortly, Swatter, but the big news out of last night, the injuries to Dane Swan. Dr. Rowan White, Triple M's own, is on the line. We welcome you, Doc, for yet another year.
Thanks, Brian. Nice to be with you.
Now, just before you give us the details of what's going on, Doc, Dane Swan, when he arrived at the airport just a short time ago, had this to say.
Well, hopefully not, but if I'm out for the year or whatever it is, well, then I'll have a think about it, but you know, that's the worst case scenario. I'd like to get back at some stage, but I'll see how we go. If I need surgery, I'll come back, and hopefully I'll get back, you know, whether that's 6 weeks or whether that's 20 weeks or somewhere in between, who knows, mate, but I hope that's not my last game, but we'll see how we go.
So, Rowan, he's talking surgery, he's thinking surgery, so what does that mean the diagnosis is?
I think he summed it up there and then, Brian. I don't have to say too much, quite frankly, but, you know, when you look at the injury and the way that his leg buckled under him and that foot of his flexed upwards, and that's typical of getting what we call a syndesmosis injury. And to hear the club say that not only has he suffered that sort of injury, but he's also fractured his fibula. Now, the fibula is a little bone on the outside of your ankle, and they've also declared that he's got an injury and a fracture to one of his foot bones. Now, that combination, Brian, is not good. This means surgery. He'll have further scans today and will be reviewed by Mr. Julian Feller with a view to getting plates, pins and screws put in that.
So, Doc, do you expect to see him back?
Sure. I think it's... Look, if it's an isolated fibular fracture, we could say that is an eight-week injury. If there is further fractures in the foot that require screws, you can add weeks to months onto that anticipated time frame. And look, I've also got to throw in the fact that I understand this morning his ankle was very swollen, so the surgery can't take place till that swelling settles down. So Julian Feller indeed will have to wait a few days before he actually proceeds with that, and again just delaying that outcome. And look, I think Dane Swan has declared it himself, the only way he gets fit is by running, and even when he gets his ankle right and all the bones heal and everything's back in order, it may be several weeks before he's footy fit again.
Doc, it's Jay here. So as a rough guess, you wouldn't be surprised if it's 3 or 4 months?
I wouldn't be, Jay. I think at this point in time, it's a minimum of 2 months, absolute minimum. That's not counting for the complications of other foot fractures and might have to be fixed. And dare I say it, if the navicular bone is included in this, then, you know, we can only expect the worst. And again, as I say, for Dane to get back into his football fitness that is required, he'll need several weeks on top of the healing process.
So, Doc, just let's say that he doesn't get back because the surgery is what Doc is describing. Do you think he plays again? Do you think he can come back next year?
Oh, I do. I personally do. I think he had a great year last year. Yep. He'd be runner-up in the best and fairest. Swanee, and I think he's been so durable. He's hardly missed games. So for Swanee, if it was the whole year, then I would think he would clearly, you know, rest for the next 6 months, and then I think he'd want one last crack at it, and I think they'd give him another year, and he'd play one more year.
Interestingly, Swanee said that he would only go on again if he thought Collingwood was close
but
to
if
a
he,
flag.
But if he misses a whole year, I would think you don't want to go out this way. You don't. And he's a very proud, I know football's not his whole life. He's a different cat. He's a good bloke, but I think he'd want to play one more.
Having mentioned Swanee, I mean, Swanee's not going to be in Collingwood's next premiership. They're not going to win a premiership this year, and they're not going to win a premiership next year.
You don't think they're a chance next year?
No, I think they'll be building towards it. I think they could win a final next year. Mm-hmm. I don't think they can win the premiership next year.
He might be over in Mexico or Vegas enjoying himself, Dane Swan. Doc, Lance Franklin, we saw him cop a knock to the shoulder last night. It bothered him. He went down the rooms, potentially got a pain-killing injection down there. What's your take on that injury?
Yeah, look, it's an AC joint there, Jay. I think he'll be fine. I think four goals helped that injury along a bit, and he didn't seem to be hampered by it later in the game, and I don't expect any issues. He'll be back fine, firing next week, and no problems. A grade one AC by the looks of it.
Yeah, Doc, I actually sort of did a little bit of diagnosis there myself on that one, but it is one that stays around for a while, though, isn't it? That'll be sore for the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, you're right, Wayne. And look, the thing is that painkillers are great for that. As long as there's no instability, the docs are very safe and there'll be no ongoing consequences with a small painkiller if the need be. And the strapping, of course, as you well know, Wayne, you've had a few of them in your time, but they do smart a bit and can honestly, they can take 6 weeks to settle down, even the most minor of grade one AC joints. So, look, I don't think it'll be an issue, but he will be a little bit sore, but it's not going to stop him from playing.
Hey, Alex Fasolo got away with one last night. Doc saw the replay. Didn't look good initially.
Schwatter, it's one of those ones your heart goes in your throat. But look, great to see him back on. I think luckily he just got his hands out in time, didn't he? And he's a spectacular player. That's the way he plays the game. He's up there and he comes down. But thankfully, no sequelae, and good to see him play the rest of the game. I know he spent a minute or two on the sidelines.
He lost control of his body in the air and then he went down backwards. I mean, just a horrible, horrible feeling. What could have been the consequence of such a thing?
Well, at worst, Brian, you break a bone in your neck. And that's, of course, we've got the docs there, we've got the emergency physicians who are on the sideline, and we've got the best of the best in case these sort of things happen. But, you know, we thankfully, it's very, very rare in football, and even if there is a suspicion of that sort of injury, they're treated extremely well. So we minimise any risks thereafter.
And the docs do a great job. Last one, just on Deledio, Doc. Damien Hardwick says he's in a race against time to be fit for Friday night. He says he can run, but he can't kick yet with that sore quad. What chance do you think he'll be to play on Friday night?
Jay, not knowing the, or just hearing what the club's saying and knowing what quadricep strains are like, particularly at the start of the season, you've got to give him a lot of respect. The worst thing you can do is get a recurrent quadricep injury at the start of the season, because you can turn what is a 2 or 3 week injury into a 4 to 6. I don't think they're going to risk him. My gut feeling is that if he's not kicking now, you've got to be kicking for 7 to 10 days before you declare yourself fit with these quad strains. Mm. And I think the club is optimistic at this point to see him playing this Friday. I think he'll miss at least one more, and they won't risk him, Jay. That's too big an injury to be fiddling around with.
Yeah. Hey, Doc, Jed Anderson's had a couple of injury concerns over his short career. That continued last night against the Adelaide Crows.
I'm not over that.
Hamstring, Doc. 2 to 3 weeks. Well,
thanks, mate.
Take it. Put it in the bank.
That's right. Look, not that I'm saying I'm out of action, but I'm down in Warrnambool at the moment, so the news filters through fairly slowly down here. But
you get the feeling, Doc, a few of us are willing to jump into your profession and just diagnose.
I can see that. I'm being edged out with seemingly I'm getting a second opinion every year.
There'd be another doc that wouldn't handle that all.
I'm open to all suggestions, Brian. I don't mind.
Good on you, Doc. Appreciate your time.
Cheers. Speak soon.
Dr. Rowan White joining us there.
It is a concern, Jed Anderson. He's had a lot of a lot of injuries. There are footballers that just don't have any luck, and they just don't get a full run at it. He's one of them.
Remember, he did get ammonia going at duck shooting, so I think the clubs are pulled back on the duck shooting trips.
The drug issue, guys. Now, I mentioned last night's game, Collingwood-Sydney. I thought it was affected in the minds. And Danny Frawley actually texted me during the game saying that he thought the young players were having trouble separating the drug issue from the professional job of playing football on the night. And I think it was pretty right. I think it undoubtedly affected them. Now, we spoke about this early last year. Round one last year, I just want to remind our listeners of what we said about the drug issue. Are there illicit drugs in footy? I reckon there are a lot. I mean, you remember Dale Lewis's words of a few years ago, and a Duck, you supported that in your article in The Age the other day. It's time for change. I reckon the AFL Players Association, it's time to take this drug-setting policy, the illicit drug-setting policy, out of their hands. You guys have stuffed it up. No one's taken any notice of it. There are a lot of players out there on drugs that we don't know about. I think the new drug results, which are going to come down the middle of this year, are going to go up significantly. And they didn't release the figures, thus casting suspicion last year that they did go up significantly. For the first time in 10 years, we didn't hear about them. But what do we do about this issue?
It's pretty easy for me, BT, and that is that either don't do the testing, because, you know, they don't have to. So don't do the testing, or if they have results like they've had, then you've got to do something about it. It's as simple as that.
Because it appears the education process, which I read in the paper today, that's what they should concentrate. It's not working.
I think Collingwood feel aggrieved here at the moment, because there's potential. I think there's 3 clubs in the top quartile, Jay-Z, but only Collingwood have been named so far.
Yeah, the revelations were that there were 11 positive hair tests, but there were some as high as 18, 19.
How does that happen, that Collingwood get named and no one else gets named?
And why does that happen?
So to answer your question, BT, in isolation, if you haven't seen the gravity of what a bad decision makes from a Collingwood point of view, with Lachie Keefe and Josh Thomas and a 2-year suspension to those players, and there are, we're led to believe, 11 players that have had positive tests come back. You can have any amount of education. It's not getting through. It's not working, and it's got to be fixed somehow.
So the players must think they can, that there's no penalty at the end of it then, if they've seen their teammates cop it.
Because, BT, there is, we keep talking about, you know, a system and the system's not working. There is no system. These are just done. It's basically a survey done for the players to understand, and the clubs to understand how many. So if there's no system, then
you've got to ask the question.
So just stop the testing. Right. Just no one else does it. If you don't want to do anything about it, Stop the testing.
And it appears they're not serious about doing
it. Well, stop the testing then.
What sort of look would that be for the game?
Terrible.
Right.
Terrible.
Mm. It would be a step backwards, wouldn't it?
Well, there's an issue, but we don't want to deal with it, do we? Mm. But we're not going to do the testing.
But I'm with Duck here. If you're not going to be fair dinkum about it, then stop the testing, throw it out, and just go back to the WADA program, right? Forget about the illicit drugs, just go back to the performance-enhancing drugs. But if you are, and you are fair dinkum about it, let's get some penalties out. First penalty.
12 weeks.
12 weeks a year. 12 weeks is probably... First offence, 12 weeks. Bang. Now, people say, oh, that's not fair. Out in normal society can do it. Hey, this is a privileged society. Mm. These guys are privileged to be picked up playing footy. They're taught and educated. They get paid huge dollars for doing what they do. They are getting an opportunity that not many others in Australia are getting. And, you know, ask the airline pilots, are they allowed to do it? And there's plenty of other professions where they get tested. I reckon it is a fair ask to ask players that play elite sport not to take drugs.
Well, under the new code, it was tightened at the end of last year, but it was a tweak.
And I don't cop the nonsense that young kids, it's a young kid's beer or it's a young kid's alcohol. What a load of crap. It's illegal. Alcohol's never been illegal.
The reality
is... There was prohibition at one point.
Well, that was before us.
Clubs are bracing themselves for players to be suspended under this Titan code this year. So first strike, it's a fine. Second strike, it's a 4-match suspension. Third strike, it's a 12-match suspension.
Get rid of the fine. Take away the thing that is most important to the 800-odd players. If they're prepared to roll the dice, take it away for a period of time. There's your education program.
For me, one of the most poignant things said about this issue was Nick Maxwell when he said that players were taking the PI-55 out of this whole thing. And in the off-season, just going troppo because they know they can get away with it. And that goes back to Gary Pert's comments, who said their behaviour in the off-season is volcanic. Collingwood has been a flag bearer on this issue, trying to open this conversation for years.
There's two different situations here that we're talking about. We're talking about having a strike, which is in season, so you get a strike against your name, and we're talking about that penalty, which has been tightened.
Yep.
This is in the off-season.
Yep.
They don't have to. This is the players putting their hand up saying, we just want this for survey results. So they don't have to do this. So they're two separate things here.
Yep.
So
in the off-season, they can do what they want.
Well, I'm not suggesting that either. But what I'm saying is, and that's why I'm saying, either stop the testing or put a penalty on that.
So if we're doing the testing for survey results, what's the purpose of it? What's the long-term use of that information going to be for?
I'll tell you.
Just
because
to see how rampant it is.
What it is because the medicos swatter and this is where Purdy's been probably the strongest against it all. But the medicos will tell you that their results of players that have had one strike and then they've gone into the system and, you know, got help and all that sort of stuff. The reoffending, the percentage is very high of them not reoffending. So they're saying that the system is working. Mm. Now, the news and us in the media don't like to report any of that because that's not newsworthy and that's not shock jock enough. So that's the argument. That's the argument against what you're saying, BT, for instance.
By the way, Nathan Buckley had this to say after the game.
I don't know what the facts are, and I don't know if many people know what the facts are. The AFL do in regards to the off-season testing. But one thing I do know is that our players, along with the rest of the players in the competition, were prepared to put their hand up to be tested for that under the guise of anonymity. And our players are the only ones that seem to no longer enjoy that anonymity. Wouldn't surprise me if they felt that a little bit.
Nathan Buckley last night after the game, and we've also spoken with the president, Eddie Maguire, and he's allowed us a couple of quotes. He wouldn't come on air, which is fair enough. No one's speaking at the moment. He did say to our producer, he said, simply speak to the AFL and the AFL Players Association. It's their issue. So that's number one. And get these great reporters who say there are two or three other clubs to come out and name them as well, because it seems unfair that only one club's been named. And he said, also, doing drug tests on player breaks is like doing a breathalyzer after the Triple M Christmas party. I mean, it's just useless. What's the point? I mean, the players are going to let their hair down. Of course they're going to have a break, aren't they?
you would think, as Schwatter said, with now performance-enhancing drugs being laced in illicit drugs, the Keith Thomas example would have been the wake-up call that the industry needed. And they say, right, if we're going to be out, could be out for 4 years if we take this ecstasy, which is laced with the clenbuterol, then we just can't go near the ecstasy or cocaine or whatever it is. That message simply hasn't got through.
Look, the trouble is the Players Association have a lot of bargaining power leading up to this new agreement, and they're going to get what they want. I think the AFL should play hardball with them, and they should simply say to them, hey, you want 25% of the total takings of the game? Okay, we're going to give you the 25. You can have that. You've earned that. But I tell you what, with that comes this, and that is that the new illicit drugs policy is either, number one, going to be thrown out, or number two, we're going to have real penalties attached to positive results. Mm.
And coaches Paul Roos, Alan Richardson, Ken Hinckley have all come out recently and thrown their support behind a zero tolerance approach, which is in line with your saying, and that would be much stricter.
So how is it that players in the AFL are so well educated about this issue, and those perhaps in the public don't get the education that these lucky AFL players get, yet the figures are probably, and they look like they're no different on the surface?
Well, the excuse is that, you know, there's a mental health issue here at play as well. Not everyone's having a good time. A lot of these players are looking for an out. They're looking to unwind. They're subject to lots of pressures. So, and Schwatter, you've been very good on this issue before, but there is also that problem where players do have a mental health issue, and this is part of that.
Chicken or the egg, though. But to BT's point, the education programs, there would be some to say that it works. It is working. There is the medical argument, which Duck rightly put forward before. This is a generalisation, not directed at any club or any player. But I think until you have a strict program in place, then you will always have risk takers prepared to roll the dice, because the current program has a few blind spots and there will be players that will exploit it.
Did you see in the Herald Sun, I think it was today, a picture of, I think they interviewed about a dozen football supporters that went to the Melbourne game yesterday, and they had pictures of them. It was a double page spread and they had the comment of each of them. You know, 80, 90% of them were saying it's too soft and got to get harder. I mean, everyone thinks it's going on. Everyone knows it's going on, but there's no penalties attached. So
you put your hand up, you sign the contract, you want to get the big bickies. There are a different set of rules applied to AFL football players, rightly or wrongly, and that's got to be part of it.
And if you want to go and suck on drugs, go and do it and don't play the game. Yep.
Or play for Coburg. Or Walhalla.
Mm. Yeah, you could probably still get done there as well, but there have been players at the lower level that have been done as well. Just before we get stuck in a couple of other issues and we leave Collingwood, side bottom, just take us through the match review, how they'll see that.
Well, he's in trouble. There's no doubt about that. He pole-exed Daniel Hannabury, went to the bench, didn't come back on, was checked for concussion. Now, the big question mark is whether they assess this as intentional or careless. You think careless, Duck. You've got a strong view on that. So in that case, medium impact, high contact, it's going to be 2-1.
It's a split-second decision where you run in. So he's running in to get the footy, and then you turn your shoulder to protect yourself. He has hit him high. So, I think it's definitely not intentional.
Big blow for the Pies. I mean, he was sensational early last night, one of their better players before quarter time. They lose Swan as well. They're going to have to call on some reinforcements.
Not in his normal makeup either, that sort of thing. But nevertheless, he did do it and he got him head high.
He did get 4 weeks a couple of years ago in round one.
Oh, maybe it is in his makeup.
for a very similar bump.
Off the centre.
Very similar situation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Gary Ablett's return. What did you make of it?
I saw him last night. It was just back to his old self. It looked like he hadn't missed a beat. You couldn't tell that he'd basically missed a full season. And I thought it was great for him to see Ryan Crowley went straight to Gazza. A few hip and bumps at the opening centre bounce. Apart from that, Gary Ablett was basically allowed to do and
did. So he took Crowley to the cleaners, did he?
Ryan looked like a big bear had jumped on his back, and he's wearing cement boots. He blew up. He blew up. He was looking for some petrol tickets. But
Crowley chased him for about 5 minutes, and then he said, "Nah, you're on your own, guess."
He hasn't played. He hasn't played for a long time. It just goes to show you that year off, and it is interesting because he's a fit guy, keeps himself in really good nick, and you can see that he's fit.
It's just not the same intensity.
That's right. So it begs the question for these Essendon players that have the year off, and how long it takes you to get that match hardened fitness back. Anyway, that's another topic.
The other one was James Kelly, and he was very good for the Bombers last night. I thought it was an encouraging all-round performance. We'll speak to David Zaharakis
soon. Just before we leave Ablett, Rodney Eade had some interesting stuff to say after that game.
I thought he's rusty, to be honest. I thought he's missed at least two of these goals that he just kicks with his eyes shut. I thought at times he probably took the tackle on a bit too much and picked the wrong option, which is, again, being rusty. Yeah, but he's obviously a great player. So I've got no doubt he'll get better.
It sometimes gets a bit grumpy in these press conferences, doesn't it? Like, he's just had 35 possessions. It's his first game back, kicked the goals.
Coaches, when you have a good win, they don't like to, I guess, pinpoint one player, because then it's all about the Gaz show. They've had a win, and let's be honest, I mean, Essendon were brave at times, but Gold Coast just said, you know, oh, we'll go now, we'll rest now. They just did what they wanted, and I've got a theory, because with the Essendon boys, and a few of them looked a little bit slow at times, it's the numbers they're carrying around. How silly does it look with all these high numbers?
In the 60s.
You've got Kelly. What's he wearing? 47. Mm-hmm. He's wearing number 47. It just doesn't suit.
You started with a four on your back.
Yeah, I know.
40.
40. Mm. Didn't get too many. But
I'm a bit flat now. I started with 47.
It doesn't look right, though. I know in American football, the big numbers. But when you see the big numbers on their backs, it doesn't
look good.
Looks like the Magoo's team.
But Rockett's great value. He was asked last night about Prestia. Not that good. Hall, didn't think he was that good. He really likes to get on the stars.
Just can I give another long-range forecast tip here?
Yep.
On Prestia?
Mm-hmm.
Be back in Melbourne next year.
Richmond or Melbourne?
Oh, I don't care where he'll be. I'm just saying he will be back in Melbourne.
He is a specimen, isn't he?
Not happy?
Fit boy.
I'm not saying he's not happy. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him. Don't know him. But he will be back next year.
And the big question mark on his mate, Jagger O'Meara. I'm sure we'll talk plenty about him as well. But those two are the big issues for Gold Coast. Just on James Kelly, going back to your point, Ducker, I thought he was very good for Essendon, but there were times when he looked absolutely spent, exhausted. So here's another one who goes in that after some time out, a pretty decent summer, feeling the pinch on the fitness front, some of these Bombers.
You were saying in our RUB meeting earlier today, which is private and confidential, that Motlop turned up to training fat. Back that up, please.
Unlike yourself, BT, who's been in the gym all summer, fair to say the Cats weren't wrapped with the condition that Stevie Motlop rocked up in training at the start of pre-season. Spent a bit of time in Bali, spent a bit of time in Darwin, might have had a few Bintangs, and he came back to KP with a bit of a moon face, if you know what I mean. So the Cats weren't happy with him. Chris Scott, I'm told, was very direct and very blunt. They set him some aggressive fitness challenges.
So, Duck, they expect you to come back at a certain standard, even though it's your holiday?
Absolutely. You have to, for instance, if you're 50 on the skin folds, BT, they allow you, I think, about 10% or something above that. So there are always players that come back a little bit heavy, and a few of the boys that go up up north, they like a little bit of the turtle.
Who's 5 kilos over, around about Stevie Motlop.
Not good for the waistline.
That's a big turtle.
Yeah. To Stephen's credit, fellas, he did work very hard from that point on, met all the goals that he was set, and pleased the coaches. But it was interesting to see that throughout the NAB Challenge series, he didn't get a kick. He didn't touch it, Steve Motlop. So the big focus will be on him tomorrow against the Hawks. These guys have history. Remember last year, Stephen Motlop, a couple of days before the Easter Monday blockbuster, was having a couple of tins at a local footy match in Colac, saw Hodgie's brother, the secret got out, and all the Hawks sledged him throughout that game. So I think he'd be feeling a bit of pressure, Stephen, because his form throughout the preseason comp was only just, and they paid big money, the Cats, to keep him at the footy club.
He'll be all right, I reckon. What about Rioli's tweet last night in regards to Adam Cooney playing for the Bombers?
Dean Rioli.
Dean Rioli's
the former Bomber.
Yep. Well, this was interesting, and we do like it when people are open and honest and have their opinions, and that's what we try and do as well. But fair to say, Dean Rioli sent Twitter into meltdown when he said this yesterday about Adam Cooney. He said, Adam Cooney and Essendon Football Club need to part ways already. He does not give a SH something T about performing for this club. It is embarrassing to watch. Now that's strong.
Very strong. And what happened about 20 minutes later?
Well, then he said this. Need to choose my words better. I have so much respect for what Cooney did with the Bulldogs.
Beep, beep,
hope
beep,
he
beep.
Hope he proves me wrong for club's sake. Hashtag love the Bombers. look, Adam probably didn't have his best game yesterday up on the Gold Coast, but a lot is being asked of him because he did play mainly forward, and him and Joe Danaher are carrying a huge load up there. So Fair to say, Dean backtracked quite quickly on that one.
Just another little Geelong sideline as well. Concussions, the question mark, Joel Selwood.
We spoke about drugs, and concussion is certainly going to be right up there as one of the biggest stories of the years. We know $700 million of lawsuits in America with the NFL at the moment. That film has just come out, and the AFL, in conjunction with the Florey Institute, are doing a whole lot of research on AFL players. Former Greg Williams is one, Johnny Platton is another, and just studying the effects of hits to the head and what impact there is, because in the NFL, they have drawn a link between head knocks and a depression type state.
And they're going to be adjusting their standard player contracts accordingly, I believe.
And I think this is the right move. Now, Joel Selwood, for me, is on a big concussion watch, and I'd be very surprised if the Cats are monitoring his head knocks very closely.
You know, I thought, Duck, he was more of a bleeder.
But yeah, he gets cut a lot. But yeah. Joel, when he gets cut, and I've seen Joel, he does get hit a lot. He doesn't necessarily get knocked out. He hasn't had, I don't think he's missed games through concussion, but he certainly gets, but he's one of those guys that, well, you seriously can't knock him out. He's that tough. But a lesser hit would knock someone else out, and that's probably why they're monitoring.
Well, he's played 200 games and copped high hits in a whole lot of those because he is so brave, and we love that. But over the last 100 games of his career, it is my view that he needs to be really mindful of this, because I think he'd be getting to a worrying level. And I know the Cats, very worried they have a duty of care, will be assessing this very closely with him because he is such a brave player.
So what do you want him to do?
Well, that's the question. Is Joel Selwood, does he have to change his game to be thinking about his long-term future? Is that even possible in the modern game?
We're asking you to change your writing style in the Herald Sun. Well, it's not going to happen.
Same thing was asked about Jonathan Brown, and Jonathan Brown didn't change.
But that ended his career, Schwab.
I know that. But Jonathan Brown and Joel Selwood play the game a certain way. Rightly or wrongly, they will continue to play that way. And I don't see how Joel Selwood can change the way that he goes about his footy. It just won't happen.
My farming techniques, they're the same as the farmer next door. I do what he does. They won't change. And I can't change from that because he's doing a good job.
Well, we saw Richmond tall Ben Griffiths cop a concussion earlier in the preseason. And then he comes out round one wearing a helmet. Now, he's a big guy. It's not often you see a key position player come out wearing a helmet. And I don't know, I haven't spoken to Ben or Richmond about this, but you would think that's a concussion-type preventative measure.
Well, the last bad-looking helmet on a big bloke was Justin Madden, I would have thought.
Oh, Chief?
What about the Chief?
What about the Chief?
He's a medium-sized.
Moonhead?
What about Croc? Crocker had the helmet on for a little while.
He did. Knock himself
They're not a good look.
You ask
Do they actually help? We should have asked.
Doc
White that.
We should have asked the doc. They'll tell you that they don't.
They don't. They actually don't help.
Even though, if you've got a sledgehammer and you're poised over the top of your little finger to drop it, if you put a bit of foam between the sledgehammer and your finger, it shouldn't have the same impact, should it?
Well, it should absorb some of the blow.
Well, why doesn't the helmet absorb some of the blow then?
The theory that
it's the jarring of the brain that
on the inside.
Yeah. Rattling. You've had your brain rattled a bit.
I actually have. And I was a part of that testing, the concussion test. I went and did it. So I did the whole thing where you sit out there for a couple of hours.
You couldn't remember any of your history?
Well, no. The reason why I did it is because I wanted to blame maybe a few head knocks on it. Unfortunately for me, the test came back normal, so I couldn't BT.
I wouldn't have thought any head test on Duck would come back normal, Swatter.
Did you finish games or not? Did you cop head knocks where you couldn't remember games, Duck?
No.
No, you remember them all. Yep. So you're fine. Big
tick. Some of us have got harder heads than others.
Yep.
Schwatter? No concussion issues?
Oh, no, I got concussed, but I never had an issue remembering the game.
Mm. Yeah.
And you'll ask me, obviously.
BT?
Yeah. I remember I flew high once and I landed on my head, and it was a shocking feeling. Absolutely, I wasn't knocked out, but I was stunned. Mm. Not a nice feeling.
Feel sick.
Shocking.
Surely you've...
I got up very high.
You've done a few functions with BT. He remembers every kick. Every handball. There's no concussion.
Fourth Collingwood player to kick 100 goals, Collingwood medalist.
Hey, David Zaharakis, we've already spoken about the Bombers, and he played absolutely magnificently yesterday. He joins us on the Sunday Rub now. David, appreciate your time.
No worries, BT.
Back in business, away you go, and I believe a big pre-season. We've heard a lot about it, but you funded your basically your own pre-season, if you like, didn't you? Were they with your own mates, or were they with Essendon people?
In the off-season, I did a bit of travel with a few mates and some of the Essendon guys as well. But then I went to Boulder the last 2 weeks of the off-season in Colorado and just did some training by myself over there. And obviously, because last year with injuries and form wasn't really a great year. So just wanted to get the right foot forward for this year.
But did you do that as an extra, knowing that, you know, the responsibility that was going to fall on your shoulders this year was going to be far more significant than if you had the whole list available?
Yeah, no, not at all. I just went there. I'm just trying to get myself going for the year and to best help the team. And with the full complement of the playing list, not actually knowing that anything was going to happen with the guys not being there. It was just to get over there and just do some training.
Are you feeling as fit as you've ever been, David?
Yeah, I am. And all my strength tests and running tests and all that were reflective of that during the preseason. So it was great. I mean, even just the group in general. All the guys come back and ran our quickest times that we had in the 2K and all that kind of thing. So it was a great start to pre-season, and obviously it didn't pan out in the end after that.
Well, hit us with the 2K time and how much you took off your personal best.
The 2K time, I think, was about 6:10, and my previous best was 6:22, I think, something like that. So, that's coming from about a 7 minute when I was 18 years old. So,
wow.
So I've come a long way since then.
Great stuff, Dave. Well done on your game yesterday. I want to ask you about how the groups pulled up, because a lot of them, and I said before, Crowley looked like a bear had jumped on his back and he had cement boots on. Have the boys pulled up fairly sore?
They have the guys that obviously come in January. It's a bit harder. They're still 2 months behind. So they try to sort of fast track the guys with the running program and got them up to speed. And obviously they're seasoned professionals in Crowley, Kelly, Stokes and the like, that their bodies have been conditioned over 15 years. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, with the running the legs and the couple of games, they'll be a bit more fresh and a bit more ready to go. But obviously, it's hard for them to come in so late. But I thought a couple of them played quite well. Stokes obviously had a great game, and he just finds the footy anywhere on the field, and he was a real bonus for us yesterday and hopefully going forward.
The result disappointing, David, but sometimes you take the small victories. Get your thoughts on Darcy Parrish, who had a pretty good game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we obviously went into the game wanting to win and realistically thinking we could, and wanted to put in a good competitive performance, but that obviously didn't happen. But as you said, Darcy, it's a great debut, one of the best I've seen at the footy club. He just has a crack. He's one of the most competitive blokes at the footy club already. That was one thing that the guys noticed even in his first training session. He didn't shy away from a contest, didn't care if it was his first session and someone was in their 100th session at the footy club. It was it's just what he brings to the table. And he's definitely a bright spark for us coming into the year.
The package has just kicked another one for the Western Bulldogs as well. Hey, Jay-Z, is it interesting with Darcy Parrish out of the Geelong Falcons? Mick Turner said out of all of the draft picks, he would be the one that's ready-made, ready to go first up.
Well, he and Clayton Oliver were the two who were very similar. Melbourne took Oliver at 4 and Essendon very happy to get Parrish at 5. Zach, he reminds me of a young Rory Sloan. Do you think I'm on the money with that comparison?
I think you can, because once he develops a bigger frame, he'll actually probably start to fill out and look like Rory a bit. And the fact that he can play inside and out, because he just crashes into a contest, kamikaze style almost sometimes. But then, like Sloan, he also has the outside running ability that he can kick goals on the run. And his kicking is probably the most elite thing I've seen of him besides his contest stuff. So, I don't think you're too far off with that comparison that they both play a bit of inside and outside.
And Zach Merritt, another who's had a fantastic pre-season, shone yesterday also. Zach, can I transgress just a little bit to the Essendon 12, the guys who aren't playing at the moment? Are you aware of any of those guys, whether they've headed overseas or doing anything differently at the moment? Are you still in touch with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, all the guys are guys do their own thing in that 12. So some guys are going overseas during the year, I know that. To get away from it. Other guys are staying in Melbourne because they've got family and other things like that. So it's different to everyone. A couple of guys were up there yesterday watching us, and that was great. And other guys, are going to head away during the season. I think Dyson's doing some commitments also with footy and obviously on 360 and that kind of thing. So there are each guys are doing their own thing, but obviously once games start, it's going to be quite hard for them to watch footy because that's when you really start to miss it. So if that was me, I'd be definitely heading overseas.
In a sentence, David, just before we let you go, the illicit drugs policy has come under the focus in recent time. Does it need reworking? Does it need deleting completely? What do we do and how do we do it?
Oh, I just think it needs time. Really, obviously, what's happened in the recent weeks, probably more reflective of the older system. The new system's just come in. So I think once you give it time and give it actually time to work, then people then can start commenting on it. But it's too early to comment on the system and how it's working at the moment because it hasn't even ran for a full 12 months.
Appreciate you joining us, David.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Port Adelaide, St Kilda, not that far off getting underway over there. We have the opportunity to speak with the coach of Port Adelaide, Ken Hinckley, and he joins us online now from Adelaide. Ken, welcome to the show. Appreciate your time.
No problems, BT.
What have you seen so far in the few games you've been able to take a bit of a peep at on the TV, Ken? Do you think it's a more attacking? Does it look like we're going to have a more attacking year?
Yeah, it certainly looks a little bit more scoring going on and a couple of really good games. I suppose that makes it even more exciting. So you've got to temper that with what the score was to what the style of football was. But I thought it took a lot of time. Yesterday watched basically the three games and thought it was quite an attacking day.
Ken, you must love it because that's exactly how you guys like to play. So it just opens it up even more.
Yeah, well, I think one of our strengths is our ability to run and cover the ground. And, that's one of the things that we like to do, Duck, as you know. And it's something we're trying to master. We still haven't got it anywhere near perfect, but we're trying to get there.
Hey, Kenny, what was the focus in the off-season?
Oh, look, we simplified it a bit, to be honest. We just went back to a couple of core values and we said, you know what, we're going to be able to play this style of football. And in simple terms, we talked about tough and we talked about defence, but, tough is not just what people say physical. It's not that. It's just being able to hang tough for long periods of the game and be able to play the game a bit grubby. And it's not been our strength probably for our initial couple of years together, but hopefully we're getting better.
Ken, I'm always amused at when a new coach goes to a footy club and they bring a new game plan and they say, oh, it's going to take 1 year or 2 years. Didn't take you guys too long to pick up on yours. So my question is, big Charlie Dixon, how long does it take for him to gel with the team and the other forwards?
No, not long.
Yeah,
I don't think it'll take too long.
Thanks,
I think
Ken.
It's pretty simple. It's he can expect the ball to come down there reasonably fast, and if he does, and he creates a contest for us, and our smalls work off that, that'll be pretty simple. I don't think it's that complicated for Charlie, and I think he'll fit in well.
You've seen the way the umpires have judged the deliberate out of bounds so far, Ken, and teams are at go to great lengths to trying to keep the ball in. What's the instructions to your player about when under pressure in defence and then advancing the ball towards your goal, but not near the boundary line? What are you saying to them?
Oh no, we're just playing the game as we have to, BT, and we're hopefully getting some good composure with that. If that means we have to force the ball long and quick at times, we'll still do that. That won't be an issue for us, and we won't be deliberately trying to put the ball over the boundary line in any way because we know it's coming straight back. But we certainly won't be trying to put the ball into the corridor if we're under real pressure. So you've got to risk reward a little bit. You've got to take it on and see what happens and make some decisions based on what the alternatives are.
Ken, it's Jay Clark here. Matthew Lobby is an interesting one and a very important one for you guys now that Ryder is out. How have you assessed his pre-season? And did you ever entertain trading him when the Western Bulldogs offered that first-round draft pick last year?
Sorry, the siren's going in the background, but I'll start with the first bit, Jay. No, we didn't. Obviously the Bulldogs had some genuine interest in Lobes, and Lobes was we had shown a long-term commitment to Lobes with the contract, and that was never on the cards for us. But obviously you don't control opposition influence and interest, so that was one that Lobes worked through with us, and that was done and dusted pretty quickly. He's a very important player for us, as you know, and obviously with Paddy out of the equation for the season, he becomes even a little bit more important. I think his form through the pre-season has been building. I think everyone's been quick to sort of jump on him a little bit, but I think Lobes is a workman. He just keeps going, and he'll probably play round one like he'll play round 23, we hope, and that'll be pretty honest.
How is Paddy going? Are you in touch with him? What is he up to? We see Jake Carlisle's working on a building site or something like that. What's Paddy up to?
Yeah, Paddy's keeping himself busy. The good thing for Paddy's got a couple of young kids who are at school, so that actually keeps him busy too. And you know, that's part of what he's up to. Gussie the same. They've both got other interests that they're doing away from football, which is really important for them. So they're able to keep themselves a little busy. I think today would be a really tough day for both boys. And you know, we've been able to, you know, I've certainly stayed in contact with them consistently on a social side of things, just to see how they're coping mentally and everything else. But outside of that, the boys, I think, you know, once the season starts, it'll be a little bit easier for them.
You've got good depth through the middle of the ground. Robbie Gray, I always like to see these superstars spend, well, at least 40% of their time forward to kick goals. What's a balancing act with him this year?
I'd love it to be 50-50, Duck.
Yep.
I'd love it to be that. And sometimes we don't get to control that, because if the ball's not coming down, there's not much good having Rob down there. But on other times, he's pretty dynamic in the midfield for us. So our balancing act is to say, OK, well, Archie and Gray and Pollack and Wines are back in the side. We've got some depth there now to cover that space a little bit better, and hopefully that'll allow us to put Robbie forward a little bit more.
Good luck today, Ken.
Thanks, boys.
And they have four of their first five games at the Adelaide Oval. So
don't you love
draw.
That when you just get that honesty from a coach?
How simple is it?
He is. And this excuse making of, you know, when coaches and people at clubs say, oh, you know, it takes a good year to settle in, and, you know, the 40, he doesn't know our structures. Yeah. What a load of rhubarb. Yeah. Thanks, Ken. I love that. He's one of my favourites.
By the way, Essendon members and supporters get along to the G next Saturday and make a stand for the future of football. The supporters have organised a bit of a walk of solidarity to the G from Fed Square. And just go to the club website for more details. That's the Essendon-Melbourne game.
Just quickly, in the Sunday Herald Sun today, Jimmy Bartel has opened up in a compelling one-on-one interview with Hamish McLachlan about domestic violence in his family. And it is probably one of the better footy stories articles I've read
Give us the guts of it.
He basically talks about how he and his mother and his siblings were victims of domestic violence, in that his father did some pretty atrocious things as they were all growing up. And I actually found it hard to read the whole thing, to be honest. And Jimmy actually talks about Ken Hinckley's influence in his life at that time, in his early years at Geelong. And he said that Kenny was fantastic for him, identifying some problems and bringing them to the surface, helping him sort of confront these issues. So if you've got 10 minutes, read this Jimmy Bartel story. It's unbelievable.
There is stuff still to read in the Herald Sun, is there?
plenty of quality copy.
Every time I pick up the paper, it's 10 pages less. It's getting thinner and thinner.
Quality, not quantity these days.
I'm not saying the quality's not there. That's very high. But the quantity is not there anymore.
Plenty of fantastic stories.
Even the super quiz has gone from 30 questions to 20.
Which I hear, BT, there is a whisper that before you...
don't ever let that out. We're going to talk about first gamers. Now, Jay-Z, we were saying only last year that the draft from last year, the 2015 draft, was one that was going to be a bit skinny, they thought. However, this weekend, the top five draft picks have all played senior football, the first time that has ever happened from the season prior.
And I think we're all pretty impressed, too, by what we've seen. The top end of that draft actually might not be that bad, because Wiedering looked as composed and as impressive as you'd want, sort of an intercepting defender in his first game. The MCG Thursday night, he was outstanding. We saw yesterday Clayton Oliver, 17 possessions for Melbourne up until half time, and was having impact touches.
Double figure contested possessions.
We saw Papley last night along with Zach Jones. Is not a first gamer, but he played well. There are a couple of other...
Parrish for Essendon yesterday. So in terms of even the rising star debate, Oliver, Parrish and Wiedering. I mean, how do you... It's going to be...
Callum Mills. How hard is it, Duck, to play, to impact a game in your first game?
I've never seen, until this round, I've never seen young guys have an impact like they have in this first round. That's why I guess we're talking about it, because I just think it's been unbelievable that those guys can come in and not just play well, but be in their side's best players. They've dominated.
Are they better prepared, or are they playing against different...
I think that they're still young kids, but they're coming in playing against young kids. They're not playing... I don't know. It seemed many years ago, BT, that when you debuted, when we were all young men... Well, that's what we were, young men, and you're coming in playing against fully developed men. It's a younger person's game, and they seem to be you know, they come in and they dominate from the start.
Well, you bring up an interesting thought there. Perhaps we should go around the panel and just find out how he went in the first game. Swatter, first game was against who?
Essendon, Windy Hill.
Yeah, and what stage of the year was it? Do you remember?
Round one.
How did you go?
1988.
How did you go? No good.
No good.
So, total stats, just quickly look this up, Jay-Z. Get it up on the net if you can.
So
Wayne Swass, first game. Not what year
How
was
many
it?
Would you think? It's sort of double figures.
Three quarters on the bench, the first three quarters on the bench.
Oh, well, we don't have to talk about that.
just the six there. Possessions oh. for Schwatter. Yeah, two tackles at least.
Yeah.
Any
good
free
tackler.
Kicks against?
You gave one away.
One.
You gave one away. That's
okay.
So six possessions, Schwatter.
One. That's not That's not great. Mine was against Fitzroy.
Muddy day.
The muddy, wettiest day.
You would have kicked 10 against them.
Sure. It was Fitzroy.
I think the whole team kicked 5 goals and Phil Cracker kicked 4 of them.
What happened at the start before the opening bounce?
Well, it was the game that Sir John Kennedy made us dive in the mud and in the water.
Why did you have to dive?
Well, that's what I still don't know the answer to that. But I was trying, and I'm looking around, and
so you're doing the warm up lap around the square,
and there's Matty Larkin and Peter German, and I see them all sliding in the mud, and I'm going, "What am I doing here? What is this?" So, and I don't think I had too many kicks.
What do you have, Jay-Z?
Just the 7 touches for one of the greatest players of all time. First up,
but any goals?
Any goals?
No. 5 donuts. Free Ooh. Kicks against.
Again,
a bit. A bit undisciplined.
I was a little bit undisciplined. I actually got dragged.
Was there a report in that game too?
No, I didn't get reported.
Well, you should have, because you got Matty Randell a beauty.
I got dragged.
Haven't asked me, but I'm going to tell you. I played my first game as a 17-year-old in a premiership year, late.
What year?
Round 18. Rounds only went 20 games in that day.
So a real opportunity to get yourself into a finals.
A real opportunity to get myself into finals. 1980.
And what happened?
Richmond's last. Well, I come up against he's a legend of the game.
Who?
I think he's an AFL Hall of Famer, team of the century operator, and Bruce Dool. Just skirting the halfback flank. I was a nippy half-forward flanker.
So how'd you go?
I reckon I kicked a couple of goals and had about 15.
Well, short of that. Just the 3 possessions.
Oh, yeah. Goals.
And 2 free kicks against as well. So we're pretty undisciplined group.
Positive one.
Never got a game. Wasn't good playing on the doormat.
No, but
dropped.
But seriously, look, it was a long time ago, but it was. You were coming in against big men.
Took you 20 games to feel like you belonged,
didn't it? Yeah, absolutely. And there was a real fear. These kids now, they're coming in and playing against other kids.
So was there an intimidation factor?
Absolutely.
You know, were the boys, the older guys in your ear?
And let's be honest, the game's changed so much, but that's exactly what would happen. When you came on the ground, the enforcers of the other clubs would come straight up to you and make sure that...
You felt inferior.
In my case, I was playing on someone like David Dench, you know, and he was
handy.
He was going at the top of his game, and he was thinking, "You're just a young kid. I'm just going to smack you around today." And that was the attitude that you had towards playing a player like that.
Well, Peter Foster in one of my first ever trial games.
His young boy is drafted now to Carlton.
Yes,
Jayden.
By the way, Peter Foster, tough, hard man. And Fozzie. I remember I'm running around and he sort of grabbed me and sort of wanted a little bit of a scuffle behind the play. And he was grabbing me and he said, "Look at you. You think you're Dermot Brereton already, don't you?" So he's just getting
into you're the king.
But it's amazing how that's what it was about, intimidation. And if you're the young kid coming in, that's what they tried to do to get an edge.
And so from your own teammates' perspective, when a young bloke would come in, did you sort of let them fly solo to let them earn their stripes, or were you there supporting
Wasn't
them?
All that long ago, Jack Watts, what about his first game?
That's right,
And who was that against?
Collingwood.
It was against
MCG,
Collingwood.
MCG, yeah.
They had every Collingwood player went to Jack Watts and intimidated him. And for a lot of reasons, that's why Jack, and by the way, he was very good yesterday, Jack, very good in the last quarter.
He was a
match winner. Not sure where he lined up in that game, but that's that wasn't all that long ago. Yeah. That was only 6 years ago.
Mm.
So
maybe a bit longer.
So they are. I guess the TAC Cup prepares you for this sort of thing. You go and watch training, and they're doing all this sort of thing, and so they're certainly prepared better, aren't they?
Yeah,
and they're more poised. I mean, look at Jacob Wiedering's decision making the other night. was just like that of Bruce Dools.
Yeah, he's a 200-plus game player.
Yeah, they'd be pretty happy with him, Jay-Z.
And they're stronger physically. I mean, Mickey Turner down at Geelong Falcons, they've got the gym set up, they've got high-performance guys managing, they're weighing their chicken already. So, I mean, they are physically, these boys are primed.
Yeah, they are indeed. And, of course, the Footy Factories continue to supply the Geelong Falcons down there with Mickey Turner and Ian Kite at the Calder Cannons. They just supply, although yep. Calder didn't supply any last year.
BT, just on that, the fires down at Lawn, very lucky the town was saved. But am I right in thinking there were four people who stayed in Lawn
yes.
When the fires were closing? You and Mickey Turner down on the beach in your undies. You were two of the four who said to try and save the town. Is that right?
Well, Mickey Turner was there.
You left.
I was there the day after. But right. Mickey Turner did sleep on the beach that night. So only because he was too scared to drive out. And it was Christmas Day, you remember, and he's half cactus. Jack Viney would be absolutely ecstatic with Melbourne getting over the line. He himself had a great game as well, and he joins us on Triple M now. Jack, appreciate your time.
G'day, guys.
You must be absolutely delighted to get away with that one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's good. Always good to get off to a good start, get the 4 points on the board early, and hopefully, I guess, kickstart a good season.
Jack, well done, mate. You played terrifically well in hard. We know that you do all that sort of stuff well. First quarter, okay. Second, third quarters, couldn't hit the side of a barn. And then in the last quarter, you went at just about 100%. The turnaround, it's all above the shoulders.
Yeah, I know. We were trying to implement, you know, get into our, you know, game style as soon as we could. But, you know, to GWS's credit, they were, you know, played really well and didn't allow us to move the footy how we wanted to. And, you know, we kept trying to do it, and it took to the last quarter where we could finally, I guess, the game opened up a bit and we got to move the ball how we wanted to and got the win.
Hey, Jack, is there a different feel among the group this year? I mean, Paul Ruse has been there for 3 years. He spent a lot of time communicating to the footy world how low a base that you were coming from. You had some good pre-season form in the NAB Challenge this year. So is that reflected in the belief and the confidence of the group now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've had a couple of tough years, you know, previously, and we've had to spend a bit of time, I guess, starting from the ground up, building some really solid foundations. And now I guess we're starting to see the results and I guess a bit of, results for our hard work over the last 2 years.
Jack, it's Jay Clark here, mate. Were you just listening then to how we explained all the boys here actually stunk it up in their first games of AFL footy? Did you catch that?
Oh, I just missed it.
Well, just worth putting on the record, you actually had 22 possessions in your first game, mate, so step straight up to the level. Well done on that. I want to ask you about Jack Watts, because his pre-season has been excellent, and again yesterday, he was one of the leaders for the Melbourne Footy Club. What has been the change or any difference that you've seen in Jack Watts over the past couple of months?
I haven't seen a whole deal of, I guess, change in Wattsy. His approach is football the same. You know, since I've been at the football club, he's had a terrific pre-season, found a lot of consistency on the track. You know, with the, I guess, the coaching group and the support staff around all the players now, we're getting elite feedback, elite development, and he's just taking his game to another level. And it was, he had a terrific NAB Cup and a great first game.
In fairness, Jack, do you sense there's a more desperate edge to his play? I mean, his contested possession work is the thing that's standing out to me. Do you see him being, you know, better at that contested ball and more desperate approach to the pill?
Yeah, no, he's certainly understanding what is, I guess, required at the top level and doing it more consistently. I think he's got, you know, a lot of players around him now who are demonstrating the same behaviours. So, you know, hopefully that helps him in, you know, I guess, that competitive edge that he's been looking for.
And, mate, you're one of the emerging leaders of the Melbourne Football Club. Jesse Hogan had not touched it until three-quarter time. Now, I saw you just went over to him and had a whisper in his ear. What did you say to Jesse? Because he was magnificent in that last quarter, stepping up at the big moment, kicking three last-quarter goals.
Yeah, you know, Hogue's had a quiet day up until that last quarter, and, you know, probably was getting a bit frustrated, but, you know, credit to the kind of character he is. He's never going to give up. He'll fight to the final siren. I guess it's similar to a lot of the players who played yesterday. They weren't having great games up until that last quarter, and, you know, as long as you hang in there, don't give up, and fight to the very end. You know, who knows what could happen. And, you know, majority of the players did that yesterday, and, you know, we got the result we wanted.
Well, Melbourne fans, get excited. You've had a good pre-season, good round one. You play the Bombers in round two at the MCG next week, Jack. Appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and well done on the weekend.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Just having the discussion in the break there that who is the most pregnant wife of all of the footballers? Who's almost full-time pregnant?
Oh, it'd have to be number one man.
Oh, who's that?
It'd have to be Mark Ricciuto's beautiful wife, Sarah.
Has she been out of foal in any of the years?
Number six.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
What's the makeup, boys and girls, do you know?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I think she's due now, but it's four boys, one girl at this stage.
How big's the house?
Absolutely amazing.
It's a big house.
She's
basically got a tennis court out the back, Rupert, and it's all closed off, so it's safe. Just throws them in there.
Throws the key away.
That's their playpen.
Very nice. Tell me something I don't know. It's time for that right now, so you better come locked and loaded. Swatter, what do you got?
Christy Yaron has been shipped off for an operation.
Who?
Chris Yaron. And it is my understanding, Brian.
Operation on what?
He's been put out to pasture.
Foot.
Has not come back in good nick.
I think he's already in the pasture.
Yeah. But he's not respected by his playing group.
Really?
He's not respected by the playing group at the moment. There's quite a bit of discontent with the way that things get a bit hard on the training track. He'll find a way to get inside the change room. So he's got an issue with regards to the respect from the playing group. And there's also a suggestion that he'd be doing well to play a game with the Tigers in the second half of this year.
Wow. Jay-Z?
That's interesting. What a good one. On the eve of the pre-season competition, a pretty high-profile senior AFL coach slipped out of the country for a week to do an education program. And no one knows about it. Has not been mentioned. So on the eve of the preseason game, they actually had an intra-club. Everyone thought he was there, and he wasn't. He was in the US. So a pretty high-profile senior AFL coach. Just
club starts with?
Got out of the country. Victorian one. We'll leave it at that.
Just give us the first letter.
No.
Give us the last letter.
What have you got, BT?
I have got an interesting one. The broadcasters of the game haven't always been happy with the access that they're given to those that make the game, that is the players and officials, because they feel that when you look at other sports around the world, they don't get the access, given the money they pay, that they should get. It is my information that's been pointed out in recent time to those in HQ that Fernando Alonso was doing 300 clicks coming around a corner and rolling several times and completely wiped out the car that he was driving and almost died. And 38 minutes later, he's doing a press conference in five different languages. This was sent to the AFL as an example of what you can do if you really want to do it in terms of getting access to injured players after the game if they're not hospitalised and in some sort of threat of further medical issues. And it was interesting that Dane Swan last night, I think Channel 7 asked to interview him. They weren't able to interview him, yet he was able to find access to Twitter, which makes you think that, you know, he wasn't.
And that isn't a crack at the player.
No.
This is the club.
No, this is the club that control it. Or not even Collingwood, not even just one club, but we're saying
all
this
clubs.
About all clubs and how difficult they are to get on with and how access at all times, not just pre-game, but after game is a bit of an issue. Got another one for you.
Just have one. But
All right, we'll go on, Duck.
I'll tell you something you don't know. This is more about you, BT. You have a little bit of a crack at my hobby farm.
Yes, the farm
down there.
That's right.
The hobby farm.
The one with 3 metres of
volcanic rock
with no topsoil.
Well, a very high profile person has bought the place right next to mine. Oh. And when I say high profile, it gets no higher sporting profile than this particular gentleman. And he's bought next door. So it must be a little bit better than what you think up there, given that now I have those types
maybe
of neighbours.
Is it possible there's two dodos?
Two Australian captain dodos.
That gives us a bit of a hint to the NRL Australian and perhaps Cam Smith.
Is that him? Oh, good get, Brian.
Is that him? Well,
unbelievable. Wow.
So, oh, he's bought next door.
Cam Smith. He's bought next door, BT. So that's not a bad neighbour to have.
That's good.
Very
neighbor.
Happy.
Yeah.
Very happy.
Yeah.
Have you got any famous neighbours?
Dean Jones.
Okay. How he's far away, though? Right next door?
15 minutes away.
Oh, he's a six away. Oh.
What's your other one? You had one more.
Oh, no. Look, you don't want it.
No, you do.
Well, the girls' competition is about to get underway next year, and I know that the papers have been sent out to potential clubs who want to host
Collingwood
a
definitely have one.
Collingwood, they haven't got one.
But they will.
They have already ready. They have the sponsors ready to go. They have the administrators ready to go. And a number of other facets are ready to go. And they are, and the reason that they would have different sponsors is because those that are sponsoring the men's team at the moment have put their money in because that's where they want it to go. And they don't want it then to be plucked off the lady. So they've gone their own and their own administrators, etc. So they are ready to go the moment they are given the green light, if they are given
that,
the green light.
That is fantastic. Just before we get to Swatter, just off the back of that, BT, I did a clinic at Ella's school. During last week, we just they had a sort of a sports day, so I went down there. There was a little girl. I won't use her name because I don't want to. Unless you ask them, you don't want to. But a young girl, and it's amazing the impact that the women's footy and these girls playing and the you know televised games. Little girl saying, and she said, "You know what? I can't wait." She's only 10 years old. She's saying she wanted to be the first woman to play in the AFL. I mean, that's how motivated. Yeah. That's what this has done. I mean, it's seriously
what should they call
going
them,
to go berserk.
What should they call the Brownlow of the Women's National Game? What would the medal be called?
Well, what is it called at the moment? Because Daisy Pearce has won a couple of those, hasn't she?
Yeah, she'd potentially be a good place to start.
Yep.
But
the Daisy Pearce medal.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe they have to wait till one of these figurehead types retires from the game.
And, of course, Darren Flanagan, former Geelong player, he's in charge of overseeing the women's game at the moment. Talking to him the other day, he said they're pretty advanced. People get a little bit carried away with the quality of competition you're going to see from the women's. Let's not forget the game.
That's a combined.
The game you saw last year.
They're the best of the best.
That was the 44 best players in Australia.
Yep. I know, but what this will bring out, BT, and you've heard the same as myself, and that is that there are some seriously good women's footballers out there that just the competition's not there.
They're all coming out of the
woodwork.
And that's why they've developed them through the under-18s competition and under-16s competition, bringing them in. They want to get rid of all the older ones that are perhaps there and bring in a young, fresh group
ready
to go. I think it's great too. We're going to hear a lot about it. This, I'm told, is the number one thing on the AFL agenda is women's football.
It's the numbers are exploding. It's the fastest growing part of the game. I drive past Arden Street and in my place in Flemington on a Sunday morning. Girls everywhere having a kick, which is brilliant. Hey, BT, some breaking news from the other game. Western Bulldogs still pantsing Fremantle as we speak, doing it very easily. Matthew Pavlich, to make matters worse for the Dockers, has been reported for rough conduct charge on Easton Wood. What's happened is there's been a ball in dispute on the boundary line. Easton Wood probably a yard closer. Pav's come in with his backside hip and got him in the shoulder neck region. So it's that classic rough conduct charge. I think he might be in some trouble. Now, Wood is still playing on with a bit of a shoulder injury, so we'll keep an eye to that. But Matthew Pavlich in some MRP strife.
Yeah, 61-13 is the score there. The Bulldogs, 7, almost 8 minutes gone of that third term.
Time now for...
This is Wayne Carey's Duck Shoot.
This is where we fire really hard questions at Duck, and then he's got to answer them, and away we go. So what have we got first up, Jay-Z?
How much is it going to cost, Duck, to get you down to Carlton to help out Levi Casbolt's
at least kicking? 100.
No.
Going on your previous wages?
I haven't got the time to go down there and help Levi.
What would you say to
him? I do help. Look, it's all about, it's pretty basic stuff. It's hand to foot. He drops the ball too high. He's got to bend over. He's got to guide the ball onto his boot better. He drops it high and then he swings the foot at it. And look, clearly he's had guys down there trying to help him before.
For years.
And it hasn't worked. So unfortunately, under pressure, out in front of the big crowd, they forget to do the basics, which they probably do at training, BT,
yep,
very well. And then out there, it just all goes out the window.
Farm update, what's been a recent... Yeah. What have you recently acquired for the farm?
Recently acquired? Well, I went and got a post-hole digger. And just to...
You've got to be careful with those because guys have screwed themselves into the ground.
I have nearly, I nearly ripped both my arms off. It was a tough job. So I've been, I did a little bit of spring cleaning up there in the sheds, just getting things organised, BT. Oh. So very, very nice.
You got the rat sack out?
And no rats up there. No mice, no rats.
Oh,
and
there's no dirt.
And I found out, I have got yabbies in all of my dams.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're going to be talking to Mark Rusciuto, hopefully, in a minute.
Yep.
Roo's got a tank in his house with yabbies in it. Yep. No fish.
Hey, how much, talking about money a couple of minutes ago, Duck, how much coin would it take to get you to go into the jungle? I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Oh, yeah.
Not enough. I wouldn't do that.
Does Dangerfield instantly make Geelong a premiership contender?
No. If he does, then there hasn't been a premiership of late that has been won by an individual.
Will Dane Swan play next year?
I hope so. Yes.
Buddy Franklin, is he still the best key forward in the game?
I still think he's the most exciting big forward in the game, but I think that mantle right now, and he's playing today, would be Kennedy. I think he's the Coleman medalist of last year, but Buddy at his best is still brilliant.
If you had to pick one between Marcus Bontempelli, Patrick Cripps and Jesse Hogan in a schoolyard, who would you take first?
Hogan.
Hey, we talked about, or you mentioned about Ryan Crowley and the impact that these guys that have missed a lot of footy that have come back and found it tough. What would you do to stay fit if you're one of the Band Bomber players this year, considering they'll miss 12 months of footy?
Well, it's an interesting question, that one, Swatter, because some people believe that they should go overseas, BT, and relax. And I think you basically train like you're in a football season. You continue to train all the way through, have a break like the rest of the players, but keep yourself in really good nick. I wouldn't be going overseas, simple as that.
Does Joe Watson keep his Brownlow?
Yes, absolutely yes. They have not been, it's not been, well, he hasn't tested positive to a performance-enhancing drug. Yes, they've been fined and then they're going to miss, but not off the back of a positive test or anything like that. And that hasn't been proven. So I think that absolutely should keep his breath.
That's the duck shoot. Just a late tell me something you don't know. It is believed on the famous Ronald McDonald House fundraising McDonald's around Victoria bike rides operation,
yep,
that a well-known bike rider amongst us four. Do you ride a bike, Duck?
No.
Jay-Z, do you ride a bike?
Not once.
And I don't. Well-known amongst us that in the first 3 kilometres of the great Ronald McDonald charity bike ride.
Oh, that's right. I remember you doing this, Swatter.
A guy that's in this studio now on his new $12,000 giant carbon fibre bike.
You're a dog.
Was knocked off the bike by a first-time rider within minutes of the great bike ride starting.
Please tell me you got back on.
Of course I did.
You got back on?
Yeah. Not happy with the rider.
Any scratches on the new bike?
No scratches on the bike. Just a bit of skin off the right hip, Duck. But anyway, live and learn. Thanks, Brian. Thank you very much, Brian. You won't get invited back for more invoices next year, will you?
Was there any road rage, bike rage, and you caught up to him and just sort of...
No, it was actually... true story, I might have gone down first, and I just finished telling two of the girls that had not ridden a bike much, need to be careful going over rail lines.
That's right, it was one of the girls.
And then I go down, and half a second later, one of the girls comes down, and then half a second later, the second girl comes down. Well, there you go. Now you know what it feels like. Don't do it again.
Let's get some of the latest news with Jay-Z. Things we've missed today, Jay-Z.
Bit of feedback just on the Twitter machine about Tell Me Something I Don't Know. This from Gordon Brown. BT's Tell Me Something I Don't Know was a whole segment on Dead Set Legends yesterday.
Who's Gordon?
Gordon Brown, not happy with your work.
Hey,
is Gordon suggesting he's rehashed?
It could be a Tell Me
Someone
Something
else's story.
Rehash.
Right. Hang on a minute. I don't listen to Dead Set Legends. I have no interest in the Dead Set
you
Legends.
You listen to the podcast throughout the week.
And I have not listened to a thing. So, Gordon, I can't be responsible. They are things I've, I know. Which part of it was done yesterday.
All of it, he says.
Oh, bullshit. Yeah. Absolutely bull turd.
Well done, Gordon, for keeping our leader honest. Hey, yeah, very quickly, Good Friday footy. You think you can almost lock that in next year? North Melbourne versus Carlton.
Oh, well, tell us about that. All hey, the Gillen's year. Already come out and said that's going to happen. So
no,
there
hasn't.
You go.
No, he hasn't. Oh, I think
don't rehash old
you
stuff.
You have to wonder about how profitable that would be for the clubs who are involved. I mean, you'd think they would actually be giving away a lot of their money that they make out of that game. So I don't think it's going to be a huge money spinner. Great cause, obviously. Good Friday appeal. Grand final replay. Fremantle are pushing for the replay to be scrapped and it to go to extra time in a grand final sense. The rest of the competition, not so in favour of that move. Eddie Maguire's plan to build a new stadium up against it. $1 billion stadium wants to build in the Melbourne Park precinct. Clubs in the league leaning towards the $100 million refurb of Eddie Had Stadium. And they could own that in the next year or so. So that could happen soon. Rule changes been embraced by all clubs and coaches so far this round. The stricter interpretation of the out of bounds rule. Everyone's been very happy with that. Very harsh one paid against Matthew Cruiser on Thursday night. We'll hear more about that throughout the week. The exclusion zone is the tricky one because the heavy penalty plays being caught up, getting too close to the man or mark, and a 50-metre penalty, and then clubs kicking a goal or coming close to kicking a goal. So that's one which is going to be a bit of a debate, the exclusion zone. The players have to work out just to get right out of that area.
Port Adelaide and St Kilda to come very, very short is our broadcast match of the day. That's over at the Adelaide Oval. Part of the Triple M Adelaide team, Chris Dittmar, Dale Lewis and Treaders all over there ready to go. And they'll be joined today by Mark Ricciuto, who joins us now. He's had his wife pregnant more than any other wife in
24
football.
Years.
She has never been out of foal.
24 years.
Rue, is it true that your wife is about to produce another?
She's 2 weeks away, BT, and you would never steal any work from Dead Set Legends. You're smart enough to do it yourself, aren't you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I'll chuck in 100 for Duck to go into the jungle next year. That'll be brilliant to watch.
Is that a 100 thou, Rupert?
Whatever it takes.
Is that a week?
You'd be great in there, Duck.
Yeah, what story would you just kick off with in there?
If Warnie could drop some big names, I reckon Duck, he could drop a few in there as well.
He didn't mind dropping a few big names, did he, Warnie? Fev was deserving winner, by the way, Rupert. Hey, yeah, Rupert, awesome. I've just found out, I don't know whether you were listening, but just found out about my other two dams, they have yabbies in them as well.
Oh, beautiful. I'll be up there next summer.
Chock-a-block next summer. Don't worry about that, Peter.
Rue, you would know that Duck is a new farmer. You never, ever tell anyone you've got yabbies in your dam because cleaned out.
That's right. As soon as he goes on holiday, we'll be moving in. I did see a photo of Duck up there having a beer with his big big water boots. Duck, that was one of the funniest photos I've ever seen.
I've actually got some new boots. DeWalt have been kind enough, BD, to give me some DeWalt boots, which are very sort of good number. Especially
BT, did he buy a lemon, the property? I heard you talking about it one day.
The top 3 metres are...
volcanic rock, he reckons.
Volcanic 1 metre of rock on top, and then 2 metres of granite, and then a really hard rock under that. not an ounce of topsoil on it, they reckon.
But plenty of yabbies.
Yeah. I really hope there is granite, actually.
Hey, Rue, just quickly, what did you make of the Adelaide performance last night? They're in a position to win, but weren't good enough late.
No, they weren't good enough. They had their chances, and I think it sort of shows where they are on the ladder. They're a middle-of-the-road side, you know, maybe a top-8 side, and North Melbourne are probably not too dissimilar. And they had the same amount of scoring shots, same amount of inside 50s, and in the end just didn't quite take their opportunities to Crows. But it was a good game to watch and pretty, I think, a high-standard game, but... I don't think the Crows would be totally disappointed. They'd be unhappy they didn't win, but those are the sort of games you just don't get back and can make the difference between making the 8 or wherever you're trying to get to. So they'd be disappointed they didn't win, but pretty happy with some of the signs.
In a sentence, Port heading up or down this year?
I think they're heading up. I was shocked last year with what happened, to be honest. I don't think anyone can really explain crystal clearly what did happen. Even Ken Hinckley, I think, would still have doubts trying to review what happened last year. But I think they'll be pushing for top four, and I think St Kilda probably pushing for bottom four. So I think it could be a bit one-sided today.
Hey, Roo, I love this new 10-metre rule. It's opened the game up. They're attacking more through the middle. That's got to suit Port.
It does suit Port. They like to play on hard from down back, so they should be able to play on with a bit more confidence, a bit more time, which hopefully should allow them to hit their kicks and going through the middle of the ground. So I think they'll look pretty good today, Port. The St Kilda side, they look like they've only picked one ruckman. I don't know if Bruce is going to go into the ruck or how they've been doing. We haven't had to see him too much in the pre-season. So a bit of a funny job at selection there, ruck-wise. And they just look a little bit small down back too, St Kilda, with Fisher probably having to go to someone like Dixon, who is going to be 6 inches difference there. So I'm a little bit worried about Saints' preparation and a couple of their tools.
Got balls on him like an Angus bull, Rashido. He just keeps turning them out, Swatter. So say goodbye to Roo.
Yeah, we'll leave you on that note, Roo. Look forward to a great call. Port Adelaide taking on St Kilda. Chris Dittmar, Dar Lewis, Roo we've just heard from, and the Port Adelaide Premiership winning captain, Warren Treadray.
Shut up! The foot is on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.